Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive contribution to the world with their transformational thoughts, ideas, and activities that encourage and inspire us all. We'll explore important aspects and areas of life, including physical, spiritual, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many, many more topics. My name is Tom Too Tall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm a regular contributor to their weekly e-zine, and I just spoke at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, as did my guests tonight, Amy and Iqbal. And Deepak Chopra was the keynote speaker for that event. I'm most noted for having had rheumatoid arthritis from the age of 5. That's 43 years now, and you can do that math in your head. And I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, which makes me sound like a spider. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication. We're the official and only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. And you can find out more about me at my website, tom2talltall.com. My guests today are my amazing friends, Amy and Iqbal Acha, who I just spent 2 weeks with, as did my wife, in Malaysia as part of the Napoleon Hill International Convention and Tour. And Amy and Iqbal were one of the speakers there. Iqbal is a speaker, he's an author, and a coach. He has owned and operated several businesses specializing in healthcare, education, and professional speaking. He's the president of Converging Worlds, a company that's dedicated to helping people redefine the human connection through diversity, humor, and inspiration. He's also an active member of the National Speakers Association, Toastmasters International, and the American Pharmacists Association. Over the years, Iqbal has personally touched thousands of lives and positively impacted numerous organizations through his speaking engagements and one-on-one coaching sessions. Amy Acha is a legal guardian, life coach, speaker, and author. She is the president and founder of Customized Caring, Inc. That's a firm that specializes in guardianship and power of attorney services, personal coaching, and more. Amy is the author of the estate planning book titled Me, Facts and Forecasts, a guide for now and later. And Amy's passion is helping others succeed. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Wasn't that a lot of fun we had in Malaysia?
Oh, it was fabulous.
It was much
longer.
It was tiring, though. They do put you on a pretty tight schedule.
Yeah, I think we were ready for a vacation when we came back.
Exactly. Now, guys, I always start my show, because of me being with the Napoleon Hill Foundation, by asking when you first read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, and also who introduced you to the book, because often those are very important people in our lives.
Well, you know, I'll take this one first. I was about 17 when I had applied for my first job. And, you know, when you're a high school kid, you really don't know much. You're just looking for a job. The guy that talked to me said, hey, if you're interested in this job, the first thing I need you to do is go out there and buy this book called Think and Grow Rich.
Wow.
And I'll be honest, I'm just going to be very flat out. I bought the book. And I probably cracked open the first 10 pages, and I said, I don't get it. I just don't get it. And it took me another 10 to 20 years for me to sit down with that book, and when I finally got through it, I had to read it again. And then I had to read it a third time. Because after the first hook, I mean, after the first time I got through it, I was like, wow, I know I missed something. And it's really changed my life. Been a fantastic book.
Amazing, isn't it? And I had a similar experience with, I just reread Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking. I think I read it when I was about 22 the first time, and so I thought, yeah, good book, but next on the pile. And now I reread it, and like you, it's like, wow, I missed so much when I was young. What about yourself, Amy? I know that your mother, one of my favorite people in the world, is a Napoleon Hill Foundation instructor and is a lover of the book. And so was she the one who introduced you to the book?
She was. Probably just a little over a year ago, she gave me a copy of the book and said, I really think you should read this. And for years before that, she had been a part of the Napoleon Hill Foundation as a certified instructor and been going to a lot of events, kept talking about it and talking about it. And I guess, you know, being who I was only half listening at the time. then she gave me a copy of the book, and I thought, okay, fine, I'll start reading it. And actually last May, I went to an open house in Indiana, at I think it was Lindenwood, Indiana,
yes.
Where I learned about Napoleon Hill, about the foundation, a little bit about all of the principles that he talks about. And from that moment on, I was hooked. It just seemed that everything that we talked about resonated so clearly with me that it was like, wow, why didn't I know about this sooner? Why didn't I take the time to read the book and really get involved sooner? Because it's something that's so amazing and can be so applicable to everybody's life. And, of course,
exactly.
That's where I met you.
Ed, I was going to say that's where we first met, and isn't it amazing? I find at these open houses that the World Learning Center puts on that the people you meet is worth as much as the speakers you go to see and the spending time with people. The Napoleon Hill Foundation and the people associated with them and the World Learning Center, they're all really amazing people with unique stories and from all walks of life and ages and all areas of the world. And so I love that so much about those open houses. And so, and your mom, she is a big promoter of the foundation. I think she goes on more of their trips than I do.
Well, thanks. I'll let her know.
Now, in the introduction, guys, to there, I didn't actually really mention the unique part about you guys and what your speech was at the convention, because Amy, you are a Polish Catholic, is that right?
Yeah.
And Iqbal is a Pakistani, what else? Muslim.
Indian, Pakistani, with Burmese as well.
Yes, yes. And so, wow, and you're married. And so any of our married listeners know that there's enough challenges in a marriage that different faiths is probably not one that everyone would choose, and yet you've made it work so amazingly well, and you, by doing it, you've opened my eyes, other people's eyes, to the fact that we have so many similarities, and love is love, and if you can communicate and find those similarities, hey, anything can work. And we are talking about trying to create peace in the world, and you've been able to create it in one little universe of yours, and hopefully you can teach others the same. And so that your book that just came out, that I just received my copy from Amazon today, When Crescent and Cross Converge. So tell me a little bit, it's going to be hard to condense what you spoke about at the convention, but can you briefly go through it and include the story of Iqbal's parents, because that was an eye-opening story. And before you tell that story, listeners have to know that you could reverse the roles of parents here. It could have been the Christian parents living next door to you guys, and the reaction would have been exactly the same in most or many circumstances. So tell our audience about that book, because it's just out, and I heard about it from the speech in Malaysia, and it has so many lessons it can teach husbands and wives, it can teach faiths, and it can teach the world a little lesson about love and all of our similarities.
I'd be honored to, and thanks, Tom. You know, so the book that Amy and I have written, it's called When Crescent and Cross Converge, And you know, as you pointed out, we're from two completely different races, and we're from two different, completely different faiths. Amy's Irish and Polish, 50-50 mix. I'm probably a 33% Indian, Pakistani, and Burmese. And she's Catholic, and I'm Muslim. That's how we were born. That's how we were raised. And, you know, we've had exposure to other faiths and other races while growing up. But, you know, when you're growing up in a family that everybody does exactly the same thing, that's what becomes, you know, the center of your truth.
Exactly.
And, you know, one of the key points that we've learned is that nobody actually sets out to say, I'm going to marry an Irish Polish Catholic, or I'm going to marry a Indo-Pak Burmese Muslim.
You're right.
You know,
right.
Love is something that just happens, and that's exactly what took place. I met Amy. Amy and I were actually students at a dojang, or a martial arts school, and that's how we originally met. And, you know, from many, many years, we were very, very good friends. We shared a lot on our professional side, and we trained together. And that's how we really developed our friendship. And then there was a couple of change of events, life events that happened, and, you know, one thing led to the next. And, you know, we just realized that, you know, that's really the foundation of a great relationship. You have to be friends. So we kind of knocked out step one from there, and, you know, our courtship grew. We grew deeper. We grew closer. And the next thing you know, we were married. And one of the interesting things was that, you know, before our marriage, during the ceremony, and even afterwards, we were always asked, you know, how does this work? There's got to be some either one of you is just not, you know, thinking right, or maybe there's like a magic secret or something, because it just doesn't add up. You know, there's two different worlds, two different faiths, and yet you make it work. And the reality is, yeah, you do. So we've written this book, When Crescent and Cross Converge, that really helps people understand how similar human beings are, regardless of the labels, regardless of the ideologies. And it also really chronicles some of the things that we faced, both good and bad.
And one of the great stories was the transformation that happened with your parents who live next door. Now I'm like, please, you got enough of a challenge already. And remember, it could be either faith that lives next door, even living next door to your parents. That's a whole new challenge in itself. And, you know, that would be a challenge for many people. And so now you're living next door in an interfaith marriage.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll share with most of your listeners today that, you know, from an Indian Pakistani culture, it's very, very common for the child to either live very close to their parents or even within the same house. It's rare that Indian Pakistanis, or really most people from an Asian culture, travel far enough away from their parents that they're not able to either see them on a daily basis or at least take care of them. And that's just kind of ingrained. And so for your listeners, I live literally 20 feet away from my parents. I'm actually looking at their bedroom window now as we're talking. So I know they're there because the light's on. And here's the fun part. So when Amy and I started dating, you know, I really never told my parents point blank. I never said, hey, guess what? I happen to be dating a friend of mine, and, you know, she's Irish, and none of that. It was just going out. You know, that was it. And you know, as Amy and I started getting deeper and deeper, they kind of put one and one together. And I'll save most of the details for the book, but I'll share with you that, you know, the final straw came one day when I was outside watering my lawn, and I saw my dad walk out. And you know, they most of the time, most of the Asian parents I know prefer to ignore the issue rather than bring it up. Like if they don't talk about it, it'll go away. Well, it wasn't going away. In fact, it was, you know, it was developing. And my parents basically drew a line in the sand, and they literally, my dad literally turned his back. And I waited for about 15 minutes for him to turn around and acknowledge. I knew that he had seen me. I was out there watering the lawn. And I waited for about 15 minutes for him to turn around, and he just stood there with his back against me, facing me. And I knew at that point that that was his line in the sand to say, you know what, I don't agree with what you're doing. And so for 3 years, Tom, for 3 years, watching my parents come in and out of their driveway, go grocery shopping, come home from, you know, work, and just see them we absolutely had no contact with each other.
Zero. Right.
No phone calls, no cards, no happy, happy birthday, happy anniversary, nothing for 3 years. So it was definitely a strain, not just on myself, but also on Amy, because Amy was new. She was part of the, we were in a new marriage. She wanted to get to know my side of the family, and that was the response that my family gave.
And then, Amy, you came up with a cool idea.
Yeah, I figured, the way my family is, sometimes we don't talk all the time, but you still send those birthday cards, you still send those anniversary cards, and every year I'm kind of big on sending that poinsettia plant in the fall or maybe an Easter lily in the spring. And so after going through about 3 years of not talking, not interacting at all, I started thinking, well, you know what, this is just silly. We're family, whether we like it or not, we're family. And as my mom always used to say, when you're family, you got to love them. You don't always have to like them, but you got to love them. So the thought came to me, well, why don't I treat them the same way that I would with my family? Let's go ahead and send the birthday cards. We'll send the anniversary cards, the holiday cards. And now it seemed kind of strange because we did actually mail it. And so it went from our house to the house 20 feet next door.
Oh, wow.
The postal service. But that way it was still getting there. And we took the next step and decided, well, we have kids. Let's use the kids to send goodies over next door, because what grandparent is going to refuse their child, their grandchild, of some cookies or something, something homemade, something baked?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so sure enough, after a few attempts of sending some cookies, we started getting a few things coming back our way. Maybe it was a few treats from a party they'd been to, or eventually worked into some samosas and some Indian food that his mom makes, just incredible food. And so she started sending stuff back over with the kids. And I think that was truly such a huge step. And one of the things that one of the lessons actually that I did put in our book was, I think that a lot of times that food is either food or small gifts are really a sign of tolerance, respect, maybe bordering on love, whether, depending as the relationship builds.
Yeah.
And it was just really exciting to see us start interacting even from a different distance.
Yeah.
At least started.
And you didn't have to use the postal service anymore.
So we used the children instead. They're much cheaper.
And then one day, Iqbal's mother, was it, showed up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was exciting. It was, it took our breath away, literally, because I went and answered the door, and we thought it was just, whatever, somebody coming to the door, dropping off a package. And I opened the door, and it was his mom standing there. And we had no warning, no nothing. There was no phone call before, no hint of it. And we just stood and looked at each other like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So that weird dream state that you can be in, that was exactly that moment. Talking to the person that gave birth to me that I hadn't seen or talked to in 3 years. And Amy hadn't really ever had the chance to talk to directly.
Yeah, and then in your book I read a little bit today where you just resume your conversation with your mom like nothing happened.
I guess that might just be from again, my perspective. It's very common in Asian culture. Like, okay, we don't want to talk about the issue. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
Let's go on with life and let's just move forward. And, that's how it was with my mom. And it was sort of like, wow, 3 years have passed by, but it's okay. You're here.
We're back to where we were, and so that's amazing. And now, what was it, Thanksgiving you spent time together as two families, and even they celebrate some of our Christmas. And so tell us now, you guys are like next-door neighbors and family now.
Yeah,
I'd say it's been great. We had, last year we had, or 2 years ago, we had Thanksgiving, and we've always had my family over for Thanksgiving or when we could, and so then we ended up having his parents, And then also they came over for Christmas, which was very exciting for me because I'm really big into the Christmas holiday.
Yes.
And not just from the religious standpoint, but from the whole, you know, materialistic thing as well.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
Having kids and the Christmas tree and Santa.
Yes. And food.
And food and lots of food. So it really was very, very heartfelt when they came over and joined us for dinner. And we had, you know, all different kinds of good food that you only make on the holidays. And we exchanged gifts. And really it was almost overwhelming. My heart was just swelling with joy that day because they chose to share it with us. And then
wow.
It was even his parents' idea to say, oh, let's take a picture by the tree. Let's
wow.
get a picture by the tree. Yeah, so it was like, wow, this is great. They really are wanting to be part of my celebration.
And
yeah.
I have to add to that part because, you know, we're talking a very conservative culture.
Yeah.
You know, I was born in Jersey, and I grew up in Chicago. So I would say that I have less of a conservative streak, but we're talking about people that grew up and were born in India and in Burma, and very different culture. And for them to be open enough to be even considering spending another holiday that is foreign to them or that's not part of their nature and to be involved, I mean, that really just, you know, I had zero expectations of anything like that happening, but it is a mystery how God works. It's always a
mystery. It is, and what a tremendous blessing that it worked out that way. It taught you a little lesson in the 3 years, and now everything is restored, and it's such a great example for them because, you know, just reverse the circumstances. There's a lot of Christians who would do the same thing under the same circumstances. And so it's kind of a global lesson on acceptance of love and acceptance of your family. You got to love them. And so I love the story, and I love how you guys are so close now. And you kind of saved a little bit of the challenge because I think Amy's mom, Judy, she was pretty good, was she, from the start? She's an amazing lady and same height as me, so I really like that as well.
Yeah, my mom actually took it upon herself when she found out that I was going to marry Iqbal to actually take a class on Islam, which I thought was very, very nice. So that
wow.
he had the basics of, like, understanding what it is that he believes. So
yeah.
she would at least know a little bit, you know, and that way she could ask questions. And it's actually, you know, and I'm saying this because I'm married to Iqbal too, but he's the best person to ask questions to because there's nothing that's off limits. I could,
yes.
When we were first seeing each other and even back into our friendship, it was great because I could ask him all those questions that you wanted to know but maybe were afraid to ask. That might be
yep.
inappropriate or
yeah.
certainly in a work context would be completely wrong to ask somebody at work those things.
Yeah.
But he was great because he explained everything and we could talk about it just like friends would talk.
Yes, I even saw some of that while you were in Malaysia that Iqbal got asked by a number of people some interesting questions and very, very calm and very cool, and even including my wife, you know, I asked him a number of things, and so a great person. And then I also know, like, your mom's faith, it would be different if it's your mom's faith wasn't important to her, but your mom's faith is
right.
important. And just as Iqbal's parents are probably as conservative and strong faith on their side, your mom also has a very strong faith and regular church attender and contributor to
yes.
the community and all around amazing person. And so as you said, quite an amazing thing that she goes out and learns a little bit about Iqbal and his faith, and what a great example right from the start. So
right.
you can't help but not like your mom. She's amazing.
Thanks. I think
now,
one of the big
yeah.
questions Rory's asked, or that I was asked quite a bit right on, was whether or not I was going to convert. And
yeah.
even my mom had asked me, "What are you going to convert?" And, you know, to this day, I keep telling everybody, no, I was raised Catholic. I'm staying Catholic.
Yes.
So that
would
that's
be a bigger concern.
Yeah, Yeah, for my mom especially, being, you know, as religious as she is too, it really, you know, I think she feels that comfort or that security too, that knowing that,
yes,
you know, she raised me and I'm not going to convert, and that Iqbal and I seem to get along fine with neither,
yes,
one of us having to have converted to the other's
faith. Exactly. And I converted from a Catholic to a Pentecostal, Protestant Pentecostal, and boy, I felt like I was leaving my parents when I left the Catholic Church. I was like, oh my gosh, I think they're going to come after me, or I'm pretty sure this is going to cancel all my reservations in heaven. And so, yeah, I could imagine if your mom was, if that would be a concern, but other than that, like if each were staying their own, then it's like she loves everybody, so good for her.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's one of the things that I try to point out whenever somebody asks me that, because I think I've been asked a few times, well, you know, aren't you supposed to make her become Muslim? Isn't that what you have to do?
Yeah.
And, you know that's one of the things that I get approached by. It's like, well, you have to. And no, the reality is that religion is a personal choice. And that's actually something that Islam preaches. It's like there is no compulsion in religion. One cannot be forced to do something if it's not what they believe. And that's one of the things that why I love my faith so much. And that was why, you know, when we first started talking and, you know, that issue came up, I'm like, look, if you want to be Catholic the rest of your life, I'll respect that. You're going to have to respect that I'm going to be Muslim the rest of my life. And if we can live with that, we can move forward. And that's how I think really everybody should be. There's a certain level of understanding that you can be aware of another person's faith or the existence of somebody else's faith. And so, you know, what we usually find is that we'll find people that are aware of another faith. So Muslims are aware that there's a Catholic faith, and Catholics are aware that there's a Muslim faith. But then when they finally have to interact with somebody that's of that faith, usually they have some reservations, and they'll be tolerant. You know, they'll show that level of, well, yeah, you're doing your thing, and I don't agree with it at all, but you know what, you just stay in that corner and I'll stay in my corner and we'll never have to mesh, so don't worry about it. But as that connection begins to grow, as you know, whether it's in a professional setting or even in a personal setting, maybe you belong to the same group or, you know, some social meetup place,
right,
and you start interacting with that person, you pretty quickly find out that that person's not a bad guy or a bad girl. You know, they just believe something different, and then you begin to ask questions. And then as you ask questions, you start to embrace, or actually just respect what other people say and do. It doesn't have to be that you have to take it on, but you can just start that step-by-step process by asking questions, very similar to what we all experienced in our trip to Malaysia. And I really love that because everybody came with a genuine question. I think that that's where the struggles are in the world today, where people are not sure how to ask a question without fear of being perceived as being malicious or being rude.
Right. Right.
And I think that that's very easy to tell, because if somebody is, you know, sincerely asking a question out of curiosity or simply out of, you know, maybe just the not the right information and they want to confirm it, that person on the receiving end, all they need to do is just smile and say, you know what, I'm glad that you asked me that question, and let me share with you what I know. That begins the step-by-step process. And then at the very end, you know, what Amy and I talk about is the final pinnacle, which is embracing. And I want to be clear. We're not talking that somebody has to embrace another faith. Because I'm just not going to convert to Catholicism, and I know Amy's not going to convert to Islam, and that's totally fine with us. But when we talk about embracing, what we mean is, Amy will actually clear, you know, either a room or she'll clear my schedule and she'll say, hey, you know what, I know it's time, it's Ramadan, I know you break your fast at this time, so we're not going to go and watch that TV show tonight. We're going to hang out here at the dinner table while you break your fast. And on the flip side, it can be, hey, you know what, I know it's Sunday, I know you go to church, so we're not going to go grocery shopping today, or we're not going to do this because I respect your time at church. That's what embracing is all about, and that's how human connections are built.
Right. And you also come together. I noticed every meal that I saw you eat at, you hold hands and you pray.
Yes.
And so you each pray your own prayer, but you're holding hands, you're agreeing with God. Thank you. This is good food, and thank you. Many people don't have that. And so just that is an amazing sign as well, and something I should do. I used to pray before meals in restaurants, and then the world got to me, and I'm like, boy, I shouldn't do that. People be looking at me. It's like, to heck with that.
Exactly.
You should be thankful for the food you have.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've noticed is that no matter what faith it is, you know, and we just call it, I think everybody's familiar with the term breaking bread.
Yes.
But when you break bread together, you know, that's how wars have ended. That's how alliances have been built. That's how loyalty has been built from centuries on. And no matter what the culture, people share food and they praise God in their own way. And
exactly.
And that's
it's part of your family experience, part of how you got your parents back.
Exactly. That's the joy of that. And so, yeah, what you saw is something that, you know, even when I was an individual, it wasn't that prominent, but I always, you know, prayed. I always thanked God for what I had. But ever since I've been with Amy, you know, we've just kind of developed this deeper bond with each other and with God. And, you know, we pray our own prayer. She says Lord's Prayer, and then I say, you know, my grace, and we just eat.
Yeah, and what a great way to both be thankful. God listens to both prayers, so, you know, just letting him know that you're thankful and, you know, realize that not everybody in the world gets to chow down to great food like that. Now, Amy, I learned about when I met you at the Open House, the World Learning Center Open House. I love to mention World Learning Center, my favorite place in the world, Napoleon Hill World Learning Center. I got your first book because you wrote another book. And kind of a story about learning from adversity and defeat, one of the Napoleon Hill principles in that one. And a sad story, but also in the end it's going to be a good story for other people.
Yes, I think so. That book came about, the book that I've called Me, which is actually a book that's written by you, just with help from me. So it's really each person writes the book about themselves, and it's laid out in a workbook-type format, and the reason why I put all that together was truly based on a couple life experiences that I've had, the most recent of which was with my brother, Jeff. When he was 42, he had a heart attack and lost oxygen to his brain, and he did not die, which was interesting because most of the time we tend to think we're either going to be alive or dead. We don't think of the in-between where we're going to need somebody to help take care of us.
Right.
And that's exactly the situation that Jeff ended up in.
So somebody to pay your bills when they come due, to keep your mortgage paid.
Even to get his mail. Even to get the mail from the post office, to make decisions about his health care, make decisions about, you know, his life and buy clothes. And
even things in that you wouldn't have thought of in previous ages, like passwords. Like if you need to let all friends know, how do you get into someone's email if you don't know their password? How do you do online banking for them if you don't know that password?
Right.
And so you're handicapped and handcuffed in helping someone when you don't know all these things ahead of time. Where does he keep his money? Where does he bank?
Exactly. We didn't know. You know, there was a while there where he was kind of hanging on by a thread, and we weren't sure, you know, what was going to happen. And we searched all over the house just looking to see if he had a will or if he even had health insurance, where the keys to the car were. I mean, everything that you could imagine from a day-to-day life to those end-of-life situations that, you know, all of us are going to have occur at one point, hopefully not for years down the road, but, you know, you truly never know.
Exactly.
So this book I put together based on that experience, and it really is a guide so that you can let your family and your loved ones know, what do I have? Where do I keep my important papers? What important papers do I have? Do I have a safety deposit box or what? And then also those end-of-life decisions. A lot of us don't want to talk about it, and I found that the older you get, the less you want to talk about it. Maybe because you think it's right around the corner or something, but they're important. They're important decisions that need to be made, whether or not you want to live in a nursing home or have private care come and help you out.
Exactly.
You know,
and so important to know. Exactly.
Right.
What do we think? But what do our parents think? Or what do our, right. you know, who our loved ones think? And so it is so... My mom's a retired United Church minister, and she had been harping on me before I got your book and filled it out. She does that with people she comes across for marriages and even funerals.
Right.
She'll hand out a package saying, you know, you really need to consider making sure this is done, including, like you said, safe deposit boxes,
right.
all these things, because a minister would know of the challenges. You don't want to be getting to a funeral and be arguing among brothers and sisters what's going to happen
exactly.
at a funeral.
And that's, you know, and it's such when there's stress like that in the family, when there's whenever there's an event like that, it's such a highly emotional time anyway. And so, you know, everybody has different thoughts, and this book is really a great way to put things together when you're not having in the middle of all that stress, in the middle
yes.
of all that emotion. You can take your time and fill it out rather than having to, you know, be forced by the hospital to make a decision or forced by a,
yeah.
you know.
When
you
got 19 drugs being pumped through your body
yeah.
and
yeah.
you really don't know even your own name, and you're trying to make all these important decisions and remember
right.
your password and where did I keep that pile of money?
Yeah. So that's what prompted me not only to put the book together, but also to start the company that I did, Customized Caring, where I did, I am a certified guardian. I can be a guardian for disabled adults, and it really is something that I wanted to do, to help out those people who, like my brother, were not married, did not have any kids, who was
yeah.
going to take care of him? And so
exactly.
I love the thought of stepping up to the plate and being able to help out, and now with families that are living all over the world, literally, you know, it's going to be more difficult for the kids to come home to take care of mom and dad.
Right,
and that kind of
right.
thing. And that's where hopefully I can step in and help out.
Right. It's not going to always be like Iqbal's culture where you live
right.
you know, next door to your parents or within a 5-minute drive so that you're there at their beck and call. And, you
right.
know, that's very admirable to be able to do that. But the world these days doesn't always allow people to live next to or close to their parents.
Right.
Iqbal, we have maybe 7 minutes left, so we have enough time, but you're a member of the National Speakers Association, and they don't just let anybody into the National Speakers Association, I found out during the trip from Don Fobbs, who is also a member. And so tell me a little bit about how you become a member of the National Speakers Association, and what are your plans for future speaking?
Oh, sure. So here's, you know, I'm a new member of the National Speakers Association. When I say new, I'll say that it's been less than a year. So I joined in about September of last year.
Right.
And, you know, what it is, the reason why I joined NSA, and for those interested in learning more about it, they can look at nsaspeaker.org. So that's the website for them. And I joined them because I had several friends of mine that were members of NSA, and they had been professionally speaking for several years. And while I've been speaking professionally for several years, I've been doing it as a recruiter for another company. And, you know, what I learned was that the message that I have and the message that Amy and I are trying to get out there, you know, it's very important to both of us. And I wanted to be able to join an organization that would help me fine-tune not just the speaking skills, but also really the main point of the organization is to help professional speakers get all the resources that they need so that they can effectively run their business, that allows them to market their business. It allows them to get exposure into different areas and different industries through connections and really build that network. So I joined, and yeah, it's actually, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but the very first thing they said is, well, before you can join, we need to make sure that you have met the minimum requirements. And I said,
right.
Okay, tell me all about it. So when I first found out, there was actually three ways that you can join. The first is that if you've given any presentation, any number of presentations, 1, 5, 25, doesn't matter, within a 12-month period and that you've earned at least $25,000 from that presentation or presentations.
Right.
The second option is that you must have given at least 20 speeches or 20 presentations that you were paid for, regardless of the amount.
Okay.
And then the third option, which is actually the option that worked for me best, was that I had to have given at least 20 presentations to an audience of 15 or more people as part of a salaried position within 12 months of applying. And that's
nice.
The one that worked for me at the time. So I definitely applied. And I'm going to actually the first major event, which will be a business lab in Tempe, Arizona. That's going to be held April 13th through the 15th. So I'm actually going that, and that's supposed to be a hands-on workshop that's helping established speakers as well as new speakers that are just coming into the business and helping them design a business plan, a marketing plan, and helping them get the resources they need in order to promote themselves as the expert of whichever industry they're in.
Right, because it's two totally different things, eh? Being an expert or being able to speak. You may be a great talent as a speaker, but there's a whole lot of business to arrange and flights and travel and fees and a lot of things.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that that's one of the things that I acknowledged head on is that I believe that I've been blessed with great communication skills and I can speak to multiple audiences of different backgrounds and of different interests, but I'm still learning the business aspect and learning how to become and promote myself as that expert. So for now, you know, my expertise lies in interfaith relationships as well as cross-cultural relationships, both in personal and professional environments. But I'm also a healthcare expert. I've been a pharmacist for 13 years, and I've been in human resources for over 5. So there's a lot
wow.
of different experiences that I have. I just need to learn how to be able to market that. And I know the NSA is a strong organization. It has so many members. So I've been a member of that organization now for maybe 6 or 7 months, and I'm just diving in at this point. But, man,
nice.
I got to tell you, Tom, when I dive in deep. So
nice.
It's going to be a lot to get out of this.
And you're going to make some amazing contacts through that, and that's going to be a tremendous opportunity for you.
Yes, I believe so. You know, I encourage people, even if those people that are on the fence, they actually have a separate type of membership. It's called the Aspiring Speaker. So for those people that have not met those requirements, that
yeah.
haven't done 20 speeches, you can still join as an Academy member. And you'll
wow.
still have access to a lot of those things. So you'll still learn how to get paid engagements. You'll discover strategies for sustaining a profitable speaking business. You'll learn so many different things, and it's just a great way to break into that industry. So
amazing.
I sincerely believe, yeah, it really is fun. Really is.
And you know, I'm just going through the same thing too, because someone, as you know, a company just to speak in Malaysia hired me, and they're like, "What's your fee?" And I'm like thinking, "Whatever you're willing to pay." And then someone was like, "Did you send them your speaking agreement?" I'm like, "I don't have a speaking agreement. It's an email agreement." They said, "Can you come?" And I said, "Yes, that's our agreement."
Yeah, there's a lot of things. So, you know what I'll do, Tom, if you're interested, I'll actually shoot you an email. If you haven't checked out that Academy, I'll shoot that to you. And you can review it, and we can always talk. I'll be more than happy to introduce you to people that I know and that I'm meeting. And I think it's just
amazing.
Great.
Now, guys, we have 90 seconds, so why don't you both tell people, like, your website again and the titles of the books and maybe how to spell the last name. If you look on Amazon, that's probably the easiest way to find your books. That's how I found them.
Sure. Well, I'll be more than happy to share that. So the easiest way for those people that are on Facebook, you can just type in the title of the book. It is called When Crescent, spelled C-R-E-S-C-E-N-T, and Cross Converge. So you'll find a Facebook page there. There's actually a link on the Facebook page that will take you to the Amazon page. And for now, and this is actually something for your listeners, between now and April 15th, we're offering a 10% discount just as an introductory price. And the code is actually on the Facebook page. So go to Facebook, type in When Crescent and Cross Converge, like us, and then you'll find the discount card or the discount code right there. And if you're interested in connecting with myself, you can look me up either on Amazon or Facebook, or you can go to my website. My first name is kind of spelled a little differently, so I'll share it with you. It's spelled Iqbal, and it's spelled I like initial,
yeah,
Q like quick, B-A-L like the word balloon. So I-Q-B-A-L, and then the last name is Atcha, spelled A like apple, T like Tom, just like you, and C-H-A like Charlie. And you can find me at convergingworlds.com.
Excellent. And Amy, where can we find you?
For me, you can find me on Facebook as well, or under my company's name on the internet, www.customizedcaring.com. So hopefully we'll make some connections.
Yes, and I really like that customized caring idea. I was single for a long time. I didn't get married till I was 42 or 43, and I had a lot of surgeries in and out of hospital. And so I needed, oftentimes, it would have been very important to have someone like that was able to come in and help. And so, you know, this is a tremendous industry you're in, and as you said, with them, world the way it is now, you know, you often have parents living in distant areas that you want to make sure they're well taken care of. And so customizedcaring.com, and make sure to go to Amazon, actually go to Facebook and get the 10% discount, and When Crescent and Cross Converge, and I'll be pouring through the book myself over the weekend and over the next week.
We'd love to hear your review, and we'd love for your listeners to tell us what they think about the book, too.
Amazing. Thanks so much, guys, and have yourself an amazing evening. Take care.
You too,
Tom. Thanks. Good night, everybody.